Yle Podcast.
Hello and welcome again to All Points North. It's a program that offers you a little slice of life in Finland each week. In today's episode, we dig into the debate swirling around government rules that have job seekers up in arms over benefit cuts. We'll also jump into ethnic profiling and parachute pensions. And of course, it wouldn't be our program without a little bit of football.
This is the All Points North podcast, telling you everything you need to know about Finland this week.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of All Points North. I'm Denise Wall, and joining us for today's episode is my co-host, Egan Richardson. Egan, it's nice to have you here, as always.
Thanks, Denise. Pleasure to be here.
Also joining us this week is former Aamulehti editor Matti Apunen. Matti is known as something of a liberal provocateur and now heads up the EVA think tank, which focuses on markets and the ways the market economy functions in Finland. Welcome, Matti.
Thank you for having me.
Now, in this week's episode, we'll dig into the highly debated and highly controversial activation model, because this week, if job seekers have not been able to meet the strict criteria set out for them, they may have gotten a little white envelope in the mail telling them they've fallen short. Some 94,000 people have seen their payments cut by about 32 euros each month.
Now, to avoid that penalty, job seekers must either work at least 18 hours in a job, earn at least 240 euros per month as an entrepreneur, or participate in 5 days of training or prep classes every 3 months. Now, of course, the government says this is all necessary for it to pursue its goal of increasing employment rates to 72%. And it's true that employment rates have inched up in recent months.
That's true. Now, who best to talk about this than those in the thick of it? Our second guest on that note is Pamela Spokes. She's an individual who's personally felt the pressure of Kela's heavy hand. Pamela came to Finland from Canada and worked in the university sector in student liaison and international relations before being laid off in 2015. Pamela is now considering entrepreneurship in service design as her next step. Welcome to the show, Pamela.
Thank you very much for having me.
Now, Pamela, as we've said, you've had to play by these new rules. How does it look to you from the grassroots level?
Well, from my perspective, it looks like there is a specific person they have in mind as to who's unemployed. The kind of people who can maybe access piece work, part-time work, short-term contracts. But there are a lot of people out there who are, you know, highly educated individuals who, when they approach people and say, hey, how about hiring me for 18 hours in the next 65 days? They go, it's not worth getting you a password for your computer. You know, that's kind of the state of affairs. So to say that you have to have a job to be unemployed to me is a little ironic and slightly disingenuous. But for me, from my perspective, I'm highly educated. I have many, many years of experience in my field. And kind of looking at what's being put out there, it seems that there's a lot of assumptions, a lot of prejudices, and like I said, these kind of disingenuous motives.
So it seems like a bit of a cookie cutter approach to you, that where you don't necessarily fit that mold.
Absolutely.
Now, you haven't been slapped with a penalty. You've managed to avoid it. Would you say it's easy to do that, to avoid being sanctioned if you don't fill the criteria?
You know what? I knew these new rules were coming in, so I searched for a course. And luckily, there was one in English. There's very few in English available. And I just kind of jumped on it, and I was lucky enough to be admitted. Had I not been admitted, I probably would be one of those people.
Was the course useful?
It was a starting your own business course. So in that sense, it was useful for me. Okay. Most of it I kind of already knew, but, you know.
Right. But would you say then that it did have the desired effect of modifying your behavior, or is that something that you would have done in any case?
To be honest, I probably would have applied for starttiraha earlier. So it actually delayed my...
Interesting. You know, how did that work out?
Just because you don't know the outcome of Startiraha. So I wanted to make sure that I obeyed the rules for the amount of time that I had kind of, and to give myself some leeway into the next step. So, you know, I know some of my classmates from that course, you know, they've applied for courses and they've been told there's 200 applicants for 17 places.
Wow.
So there's a lot of people that are out there that are trying to do what they're supposed to do.
Can you explain for our listeners who may not be familiar with these technical terms that are used in the employment office world, what Startiraha means? What do you mean when you talk about that?
That's just the grant that they will give you to replace unemployment benefits when you want to start your own business.
Okay, so that's what we're talking about.
Yeah.
How useful and how helpful were the officials that you dealt with in this entire process?
I think they tried to be as helpful as they could be, but, you know, this was done in such a rushed manner and over kind of a holiday season and everything. So the kind of information they had was very sketchy. They were not fully prepared for the amount of people asking them questions. You know, I spoke with Kela, I spoke with the Te Toimisto, I have spoken with many people and I have had many different responses. I've had one group of people, you know, telling me about this 4-month trial period for your own business and not knowing how that fits in with Startiraha, and someone with Startiraha saying, I don't know how that other thing works. Like there doesn't seem to be any kind of cohesion in the information, and the information came very late, very, very late. And, you know, no bad feelings towards the people who work there.
It sounds like it's a learning curve for everybody. Now, Matti, you're coming at this from the macro level. Are these kind of rules really necessary?
Oh, well, yeah, it's some stuff, and I suppose it is. No system is perfect. And when Pamela said that to have a job to be unemployed, that really sounds ironic. But the whole point is you know, for a unemployed person to meet with other people, employers, opportunities, and so on. As Louis Pasteur said, chance favors the prepared mind. And the whole point here is to enhance the incentives to accept a job. Because I think the basic fact is that the longer you stay unemployed, the weaker are your chances to be employed again. It's a linear thing that goes, you know, straight southeast. So the sooner you get a new chance, the better it is for you. So we need to nudge people. This is a specific term, you know, used in social policy, health policies. You may know the term. You know, we give a person a little light push, you know, to send him to the right direction. And economists all over the world, they say this nudge approach is a clever thing. It's a good thing to do. So why not in labor market policy?
Pamela, you want to interject?
Yeah, I just wanted to say I made a list here because of this very thing. So in the past 3 months, I have attended multiple networking events when possible. I've run a workshop at a conference. I've planned and run a 3-day workshop design sprint in my field. I've written a journal article. I've written articles in my own blog and LinkedIn. I've applied for multiple jobs. I've had 3 job interviews. I'm doing a course online in selling service design, which I paid for myself. I'm a volunteer at the Red Cross. But none of this is considered being active. Not one of the things on that list. Only because I jumped on that course in English am I considered active.
This maybe goes towards what we heard from Keller yesterday, that it's not really clear that this model seems to have made any difference in people's behaviour, because the people that were active already, they're able to meet the conditions, and the people that were not active just take the cut, that's just the way it works for them.
And I'd like to say that it seems to suggest that I think what Matti is saying, and certainly what Pamela is saying, it suggests that this nudging seems to be targeting people who are less likely to be active. And certainly to my mind, it suggests that the long-term unemployed are the people who need more of that gentle push in the right direction than the people who are fresh out of work and are actively trying to get back into the labour market.
Is it possibly just that the government didn't dare to cut unemployment benefit directly, so they brought in this model to make it more acceptable?
No. Well, we had different stories. I think Ylek published a story a few days ago about a shoe shop owner in northern Karelia who said like earlier she had troubles finding temps. And after the active model, people, you know, they step into her shop apply for jobs. And she said specifically this hasn't happened before. And she said it's probably due to the model. I don't know. That's her story.
Well, it certainly suggests that it favors employers. We're not sure about how the temps feel about it.
But there are two different kind of approaches here from the government. Because they had the basic income experiment, which I think intends to increase security for people if they're unemployed. And then the active model, which kind of reduces the security a little bit. Is there some contradiction there, or is this just healthy experimentation? I mean, how do you think Finnish social security will look in 5 years' time?
Oh, well, the whole social security model, I think we need to rethink it totally. And if you ask me, I don't believe in basic income. I don't believe that will ever work. It will be either too expensive, or then people will, you know, just not be happy about the level of the basic income. I believe in models like personal health care accounts, social security accounts, like the ones they have implemented in Singapore, Chile, and other places. I think that's the future, but that's a different story, of course. I even believe in the British universal credit model. I think that could be a good start. We need to do something. I mean, the system as it is right now, it's far too complicated. You know, there's too many moving parts. The people just cannot keep up with the complexity of the system.
Speaking to that point, Matti, one of the things that we heard from the Juha Sipilä government is the aim to sort of streamline government services and simplify things and remove redundancies and red tape. And here we have in this active model measure an instance where Kela has prepared itself for people whose benefits are cut to go and apply for basic income support. So instead of people looking to going to one door, there is the possibility that people will be jumping from door to door, which suggests an increase in bureaucracy rather than a reduction. Is there something that wasn't fully thought through in this model, you think?
Yeah, probably, very likely. As I said, no system is perfect, but you know, we have active models elsewhere as well. For instance, in Denmark, and it's even tighter in Denmark. It's tougher, and it seems to work. So when people say this active model is somehow inhumane or humiliating or whatever, I don't think that's a fair assessment. The other side of the equation is that in Denmark they have more individually tailored employment services and simply more personnel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. But we need to improve our system as well. But it's a different thing than to say that it's inhumane or humiliating. It's not.
Pamela, would you come back?
Yeah, I would say the OECD has come back and shown us in some of their reports that Finland has the highest rate of poverty in unemployment in all of the Nordic countries, first of all. And also, you know, this activation model in Denmark, you know, they have 12 clients per person. So when you're talking about having more personnel, it is vastly more personnel. We each person here in Finland has 166 clients in their caseload. How you plan to help those people individually is impossible. You know, and in that same report, the OECD very much kind of wrapped Finland over the knuckles for their sheer lack of these general services, which are things like making employment plans, going ongoing counseling, monitoring job searches, all of these things that have shown again and again that they actually are the things that improve employment numbers. And, you know, Finland is by far much, much lower than the OECD average in all of these. And these cuts keep happening. And, you know, those cuts combined with the structural change in the economic base causing this.
I think we let Pamela have the last word on that segment. At this point, we want to move on. Let's take a look at a question from our audience. Rich Hills has asked if there's any chance at all that the government might revisit the activation model in its present incarnation and make it somewhat less punitive to people who can prove that they're actually trying. And as you've heard from Pamela, there's been, you know, there are other people like Pamela who have issued an outcry. And there's even a citizens' initiative that's been taken to MPs to sort of scale back the model so that it doesn't seem to be as punitive. What are the odds, you think, on a government U-turn or some kind of turn on this issue?
You mean the cancellation of the activation model?
Or some modification of the model?
Modifications, of course. Hopefully, absolutely, modifications. You know, the designers of the system, they themselves say it needs modifications for sure, but cancellation of the system would be crazy at this point, because, for instance, the timing for this thing is right. There is plenty of demand of labor on the labor market, so this is a good time to improve the incentives to accept a job.
So definitely no turning back. Lee Matthews is asking next if there's any real broader economic benefit to be had from shaving off benefits paid to some unemployed people when it will reduce their disposable income and take money out of the economy. That's Lee Matthews' reasoning. Matti, do you think there's a risk there?
Well, the if people don't meet the criteria, the level of their allowances decreases by what? 4.65%.
32 euros a month.
Yeah. So that is a point, but I don't think that's the key issue here.
Okay. Now, I'd like to bring Pamela in here for a bit. Every time this issue around unemployment, you know, and trying to activate unemployed people arises, there's a section of the community that argues that unemployed people are being rewarded for doing essentially nothing. How do you respond to that?
I would say that, you know, the language that's used around this topic is prejudice in itself. The whole term activation model is a judgment on whether you're active or not. Hmm. Right? Right there, we're starting at an assumption of who you are and what you do and what you value. And this is like unemployment is an ecosystem, but it's done as if it's like a singular thing. But it is a vast ecosystem that isn't cohesive. Nobody looks at it as a whole. And there are many things, you know, there are lazy people who are unemployed, but there are lazy employed people. There are lazy young people. There's lazy old people. There's lazy people in every sector.
I'm lazy at times.
Exactly. So this is almost like the least common denominator. We can just get rid of that, right? Because the vast majority of people, it is human nature to want to work, to feel valuable to society. And I think we're looking at the wrong problem. The wrong problem we're looking at here is we're focusing on this, are they lazy? Are they not lazy? And that's a distraction. That is political, you know, backspeak and
so where do you think the focus should lie?
The focus should lie on seeing these people as human beings and understanding that everybody has a role to play and wants to play a role. And we need to kind of get look at this as an ecosystem. As a service designer, I look at this and I'm like, this part doesn't speak to this part, doesn't speak to this part. Nobody knows what's going on. You ask 100 people the same question, you get 100 different answers. And it's very difficult to work with this and know what you should do, what you shouldn't do, what's right, what's wrong.
Mm. Too many silos.
Pamela, I don't think nobody said, you know, the word, used the word lazy. Nobody accused people of being lazy. But becoming passive, it is a real risk, you know.
But do you know where that comes from? That passive is it's a byproduct of depression, anxiety, fear.
Yes. Yes.
All of these things. And that's the problem
when
that you need to
yourself,
fix.
When you're by yourself. Yes. When your connections to the you know, the
Absolutely.
Remaining society are one by one cut.
Mm. Absolutely.
When you lose the job, you yeah. lose, you know, the community.
And
you lose a
judgments.
Lot of things. So it is very, you know, tempting to become passive, to stay home. Mm-hmm. You know,
the
watch,
shame.
Watch, you know.
What do you do? You go to a networking
you know,
event. What do you do?
The internet and so on. So, yeah. If you don't like the word activation model, would nudge model be better?
Nudge model. You know, I gave you my list. Do I need nudging?
No,
I
would say I'll answer for all the policymakers.
It sounds like
you've definitely been very active, Pamela.
But still, I don't understand why you find, you know, these terms itself insulting.
Because they're judgmental. They are judgmental. They come with
preconceptions.
What do they
call it in Denmark? Is there a different
I can't recall the term.
Well, it certainly sounds to me like essentially Matti and Pamela, you're on the same page that something needs to be done and people need to get out there and do things. Pamela is arguing, though, what are the resources to assist people like herself who are already very active and need a more sort of customized sort kind of assistance in order to get back into the job market rather than the sort of cookie cutter yep. rubber stamp
approach.
I totally
agree.
Mm. Yeah.
I've interviewed some people from who were previously employed in, I think it was 2006, 2007, and they said that at that time there were extra tools for people who were highly educated to kind of get back into the workforce. And she said now everything's just cut. It's very basic. You know, everything's online. You never meet with anybody. It's whatever.
And now let's move on to our roundup of this week's main stories. Ethnic profiling by police was in the news with a study from Helsinki University finding that officers do engage in the practice, even though Finland's Aliens Act prohibits such targeting. Among other findings, the report noted the risk of a Somali background resident being unnecessarily profiled is nearly 10 times that of a white person.
Right, and the number of escorted deportations is expected to double this year from 550 last year to more than 1,000. That's due to increased pressure to repatriate asylum seekers who've been denied residence permits in Finland.
Facebook admitted yesterday that nearly 20,000 people in Finland may have had their information collected by data mining firm Cambridge Analytica. The firm is believed to have mined information on up to 87 million Facebook users worldwide without their permission, and used it to create targeted advertising that could have influenced elections in the US and elsewhere.
Now, according to a report by the sports think tank UKK that came out yesterday, children who exercise regularly are likely to study up to 1 year longer and earn up to 5,000 euros more than their less active pairs. The authors of the study also say that sedentary habits can cost society as much as 3 billion euros annually.
Helsinki City Council took a shot at the government's plans to reform social and healthcare services in Finland, approving a negative statement by 80 votes to 3. The reform would expand private providers' share of healthcare and create 18 new regional governments to oversee it. The council was annoyed as the plans could transfer funding from the Helsinki region to the rest of the country.
And the Speaker of Parliament agreed this week to make changes to MPs' very generous parachute pensions. MPs that were elected to Parliament before 2011 and have served for at least 7 years enjoy a pension of up to 6,000 euros. Lawmakers elected after 2011 are entitled to have a right to claim adjustment money for up to 3 years.
Finnish Football League Veikkausliiga starts this week, and it has a new stance on postponement. Basically, there won't be any. Clubs who fail to get their pitch playable will need to find another venue or lose home advantage, with the first rash of changes due on the 15th of April when, for example, TPS Turku will have to travel 140 kilometres to play their first home game of the season in Valkeakoski. And don't forget, you can read all about these and other stories on our website at yle.fi/news. Now, Matti, I want to ask you about this in your capacity as the chairman of Veikkausliiga. Is it really fair to make football clubs play away from home if their pitch is covered in snow?
Well, it's a long story. We have a constant problem. It's called the winter, or the slow spring. We need to have, you know, modern stadiums with you know, modern surfaces, modern turfs, so-called football grass, which is, you know, can be heated and can be used in April, and this has been a long project. We need to modernize the stadiums, and we've done exceptions after exceptions year after year. So finally, the clubs themselves, they said this is enough. Now we need to do something. So I emphasize, this was a unanimous decision last year that we won't postpone the games anymore, because there are stadiums that can be used, you know, in early April. Some people say it's unfair, you know, to have, for instance, TPS playing in Valkeakoski. But what about those clubs and cities who have renovated the stadiums, you know, built the new turfs, and they've already done it. And now, if we move, you know, the places that hasn't improved conditions, they can have the best, you know, spots in June, July, and August. And the ones who already had paid the bill, They have, you know, the worst audience spots in April, May, and so on. Do you call that fair?
I agree. If you spend the money on your ground and another club decides to spend that money on their team instead, then that's not really fair either. I think that's really good.
Yeah, we'd like to create pressure to clubs and cities and communities. This is not, you know, just about the clubs. This is also about the cities, you know, around the clubs. Like what has Turku done? What has Tampere done? I'm happy to report that we have right now 5 or 6, you know, stadium projects in the tube, and we'll have definitely vastly better conditions in 2 or 3 years in 5 cities. So this is, you know, this is a temporary, you know, inconvenience.
It's a nudge in the right direction.
Yes, today, lots of unfair things and lots of nudges, yes, I suppose. So, yeah.
I've followed Finnish football for a long time, and yes, the winter is a problem, and I've been frustrated with the standard of facilities in Finland. So I think, in the end, it's a positive move, but how would you feel for supporters, for fans who've bought a ticket for the game in Turku in April, and now they're going to have to travel 200 kilometres? Is that a matter for the club? The club has to deal with that.
Well, if they are unhappy, I suggest they send, you know, their unhappy messages to the city of Turku or the club. You know, we didn't invent this last week or last month. We have talked about this, you know, for the last 15 years. So finally, we need to do something. Mm. And I say again, this was unanimous. Every club, you know, signed the idea.
Okay.
Change comes slowly in Finnish football. But
and when it comes in a rush. Yeah.
Another slow-moving reform, though. See what I did there?
Yeah.
It's very nice. Social and healthcare reform. It seems to be in trouble with the Helsinki, the people from the capital city region, the politicians, quite angry about this at the moment, and threatening to vote it down. Do you think it's going to go through, or do you think the Helsinki MPs will vote against it, even in the Kokkolmos?
Well, I think my guess is as good as yours, but if you ask me, I think the SOTE legislation will go through.
Okay.
Finally, but it will. I think it will.
Is it a good thing?
Oh, well, I'm all for freedom of choice, but this model is not the one I wished, you know, we would have. It's a result of far too many compromises, and it's not what it was meant to be. So, was that a answer to your question?
It's interesting. What aspects to the model would you have liked to see shape up in a different way?
I'd like to see the Swedish model as it is implemented in Sweden. We would have had a functioning, you know, model, you know, right next door, and it covers the basic healthcare.
Yeah, very briefly, what in the Swedish model works, do you think?
The real freedom of choice. You can choose your doctor and your health center however you wish. I mean, based on the information you have on the healthcare centers. Why should I care if the services are provided by public sector or a private operator? I shouldn't care. I just take the best service and pay for that.
Okay, Pamela. You're sitting very quiet in the corner there. Let's bring you into the discussion a little bit. Have you been following the SOTE discussion? What are your thoughts?
To be honest,
on the proposed changes.
Yeah, it's not one of those things that's on my radar at the moment. I'm spending all my time looking for work.
Understandably, yes.
And it's partly just due to the amount of information that's available in English, to be honest, regarding this kind of behemoth of a topic. So there's usually just short summaries of what's happening.
There is some information on ule.fi/news.
There's too much information, and there are so many reports and much data. I mean, I'm totally confused about it. So.
Yeah. I think if I dare say so, I think that you see that in some of the reporting that, you know, at various points when various aspects of SOTE are being discussed and reported on, it's anybody's guess who understands what.
Yeah.
And what they understand by what they report. Yeah. So it's quite a complex series of reforms. And it's quite difficult, I think, for policymakers and for journalists to sort of reduce it down to the lowest, you know, common denominator that makes sense to anyone.
It's been a wrestling match of the economists who are the wizards of modern times.
Indeed. We'll continue to wrestle with it.
We will.
So it looks like we're nearing the end of this episode of All Points North this week, and it's been quite a week. On the bright side, it looks like spring is finally here, although I saw snow flurries a short while ago, and we might have somewhat warmer weather for the weekend. Egan, will you be heading out to enjoy it?
Apparently not. It says here that I will be spending this weekend at the checking out tattoo art at the Cable Factory in Helsinki, and I might even decide to go under the needle.
Wow. Well, that's something that I would look forward to hearing more about. What about you, Pamela?
I am actually going to be spending my weekend at a startup boot camp at Startup Sauna.
Wow. You are so dedicated to your cause, and I am looking forward to hearing about your business happening, because you are definitely on the right path. Matti, what about you?
Oh, football, of course. I mean, on Saturday, Leicester Newcastle, and then some Veikkausliiga, of course.
Okay.
Snow or not,
football for you. Well, on that sporting note, we'd like to thank our special guests, Pamela Spokes and Matti Apunen. Thank you so much for joining us this week. And don't forget to stay in touch with us via our Yle News Facebook, Twitter and Instagram accounts. This week's show was presented by me, Denise Wall, and Egan Richardson. It was produced by Lydia Taylorson and Mark Odom. And our audio engineer this week was Tuomas Vaukkonen. Thanks for joining us, and don't forget to tune in again next week.
You've been listening to All Points North, a podcast produced by Yle News, a unit of the Finnish Broadcasting Company. For daily news from Finland in English, head to yle.fi/news and follow us online at Facebook, Twitter and Instagram. You've been listening to Yle News.